God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things. This is Brother Hutchings inviting the listeners to another Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. And here now is Brother Jerry.
Thanks, Brother Hutchings. Today, Brother Hutchings and Dr. Larry Spargimino pick up where they left off Friday in the 8-part series based upon Brother Hutchings' updated commentary, Daniel the Prophet. The series ends Wednesday, so plan now to listen each day. Here now is Brother Hutchings to tell us about Daniel chapter 8.
Thank you, Brother Jerry. Chapter 8 is an interesting chapter in that Josephus said that Daniel was very popular and his prophecies were proven by the fact that he would prophesy certain things that would come to pass in his lifetime and then prophesy things that are going to happen hundred or thousand of years in the future. But by the prophecies that he made coming to pass in his lifetime proved that God was giving him the ability to foretell the future until the end of the age when the Messiah would come a second time. Chapter 8 is one of the near prophecies of Daniel. Dr. Spargimino, could you give a brief review of Chapter 8?
Yes, thank you, Dr. Hutchings. Here we see at the beginning of Chapter 8 that a vision appears to Daniel. And Daniel sees a ram and a he-goat. And we're told in the scripture, the ram which thou sawest having two horns are the kings of Media and Persia. And so as Daniel watched the ram moving to the west, the east, and the north, a great male goat came charging in from the west in great fury, and the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. Daniel writes that the goat ran at the ram with all of its power and fierce anger. Now, the goat is Greece, and the national emblem of Persia, or Iran, was a ram. Persian coins had a ram's head engraved on one side, and the national emblem of Greece was a goat. And the coins of this nation carried the outline of a goat. Now, the angry goat was Alexander the Great. Josephus tells us how Alexander would frequently go into a rage when he was challenged in battle. In Daniel chapter 8, verses 9 through 14, there are some things that are very, very significant. Of course, all of Scripture is important, but we're trying to hit the highlights. And in these verses, there is a little horn that arises. What or who does it represent? Well, the initial fulfillment is Antiochus Epiphanes. He was known for his cruelty and hatred of the Jewish nation. But the far and final fulfillment is the Antichrist. And so as you point out, Dr. Hutchings, in your book, the little horn of chapter 8 is the same as the little horn of chapter 7. Now, some believe on the basis of this that the Antichrist is Assyrian. I know we've heard that view from time to time, or maybe an Assyrian. And we wonder how could such an individual be the head of the revived Roman Empire of Europe? And as you point out, that one of the commodities that is needed by modern nations is oil. Perhaps the Antichrist, coming from an oil-rich part of the world, could become the head of a European coalition. But here we see something that has an immediate fulfillment. And as Josephus pointed out, this shows that Daniel was absolutely correct. And certainly there is a far and a distant fulfillment.
Yes, chapter 8 certainly proves that Daniel was a true prophet, because we know that Alexander did come from the west and overrun Medo-Persia, which today would be Iraq and Afghanistan. So that prophecy was fulfilled exactly. But chapter 9 contains one of the most amazing prophecies, I think, in the Bible or of any book that was ever written by anyone. It's an amazing, amazing prophecy that is being fulfilled in our day. And we know that the part of the prophecy that has been fulfilled, that the rest is going to be fulfilled. And we wonder when the Lord is going to come and what is going to happen Well, Daniel tells us here in this chapter. But in chapter 9, we read that Daniel was still concerned. God had given him many prophecies, but he was still concerned about when all this was going to happen. And we read there that he was seeking God, when are you going to restore our people? How long is it going to be? How long is it going to be before you fulfill the covenant? How long are we going to be in the land and the holy temple be restored and the Messiah comes? So he wanted to know. And I'll tell you, this prayer of Daniel is one of the most soul-searching, patriotic prayers, I think, in the Bible. Dr. Spargimino.
Yes, I would agree. And at the beginning of his prayer, Daniel made his confession, asking God to forgive his own sins and shortcomings. And, you know, that's interesting because there's not a single sin or fault mentioned against Daniel in all of the Bible, but the prophet was careful not to fall into the error of being self-righteous. He pointed out that the only righteousness that really matters is that which comes from God and which is imputed by faith. And then Daniel claimed the promises of God as the Almighty, who always kept his word and showed mercy to those who love him and keep his commandments.
Yes, over and over in that prayer, he beseeches the Lord. It's just an amazing prayer. And I would suggest that after the program today, you may want to go back and read that. And we read, and now, O Lord thy God, that has brought thy people from out of the land of Egypt with a mighty hand, has gotten thee renown. And as of this day, we have sinned, we have done wickedly. He goes on and says, O Lord, hear, O Lord, hearken, and defer not, O my God, for thy people. So he continues that prayer. So God answers his prayer. He sends Gabriel to give him the answer to that prayer. Dr. Spargimino, would you read?
Well, yes, we begin where it says, and while I was speaking and praying and confessing my sin and the sin of my people Israel, and presenting my supplication before the Lord my God for the holy mountain of my God, yea, whilst I was speaking in prayer, even the man Gabriel, whom I had seen in the vision at the beginning, being caused to fly swiftly, touched me about the time of the evening oblation. And he informed me and talked with me and said, O Daniel, I am now come forth to give thee skill and understanding. At the beginning of thy supplications, the commandment came forth, and I am come to show thee, for thou art greatly beloved. Therefore, understand the matter and consider the vision.
Now, Gabriel informs Daniel here how long it's going to be until God fulfills all his promises to the nation of Israel. And that's what Daniel wanted to know. Now, we read here in verse 24, 70 weeks are determined upon thy people and upon thy holy city to finish the transgression and to make an end of sins and to make reconciliation for iniquity, and to bring in everlasting righteousness, and to seal up the vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy. Now then, 70 weeks, he tells Daniel, are determined upon the nation of Israel. Dr. Spargimino, these are not 70 weeks. The weeks are not weeks of days, are they?
They are 70 weeks of years, speaking about 490 years.
So what we have here is the 70 weeks are not a weeks of days, but weeks of years. 70 times 7, 70 weeks of 7 years each week, that would be 490 years. So Gabriel tells Daniel that in 490 years, everything that God has promised Israel is going to be fulfilled. But there was a catch there. When was these years going to start?
Yes, there would be 490 years, but there would be a gap, of course, between the 69th and the 70th year. So actually 490 years come to pass, but not consecutively. And then we are told this, know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem unto the Messiah the Prince shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. The street shall be built again and the wall even in troublous times. And after 62 weeks shall Messiah be cut off, but not for himself. Of course, speaking about Jesus.
Let's go back to the beginning of verse 25. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem unto the Messiah the Prince shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. Or that would be 483 years, because he's talking here about 69 weeks. He cuts off 1 week there, the last week or the seventh week, which we're going to get to later. But the 490 years were to start when the commandment was made to rebuild Jerusalem and restore the temple. But there were several decrees given to accomplish this, but the final decree that was issued in 445 B.C. Now, that was when the command was given and Nehemiah was given the go-ahead to go back to Jerusalem. And the temple was the process of rebuilding the walls and restoring Jerusalem took 7 weeks or 49 years. And then from that until the Messiah would be cut off would be another 62 years. So what we have here would be 7 years rebuilding the walls and the city. And then, after that was done, it would be another 62 weeks until Messiah would be cut off. So the walls and rebuilding of Jerusalem did take 49 years. And then from that date, another 62 weeks, altogether 483 years from the commandment in 445. Now there is a 4-year era in our calendars that's acknowledged, so the actual date would be 449 B.C. when the time started. And if you go the 69 weeks from that are 483 years from 449 B.C., we come to exactly 33.5 A.D. And that's when Jesus Christ was crucified. So that is one of the most amazing prophecies in the Bible, because told here Messiah would be cut off after 69 weeks or 483 years from the decree that was given to rebuild Jerusalem. And it happened exactly like that in 33 A.D. was when Jesus Christ was crucified. But Dr. Spargimeno, we read that the Messiah would not be cut off for himself. What does that mean?
Yeah, he was not cut off for his own sins because Jesus had none. He was cut off for the sins of the world. And so it says, as you've pointed out, and after 62 weeks shall Messiah be cut off, but not for himself. And the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary, and the end thereof shall be with a flood, and unto the end of the war desolations are determined.
Yes, but we know that when Jesus Christ was crucified, the time stopped. There's 1 week left. There is a breach. A breach occurred between God and Israel when Israel rejected the Messiah and crucified him. So there is a breach between God and Israel that has not been healed as yet. So we still have the 7 years to come. Now, how do we know there is a breach between God and Israel during the 69th and 70th week? Because the Bible tells us. For example, we read in Isaiah chapter 30, verses 25 and 27, and I will read those. And there shall be upon every high mountain and upon every high hill rivers and streams of water in the day of the great slaughter. Now we're coming up here to the tribulation period. When the towers fall, you know, God does not like towers. We can go all the way back to the Tower of Babel. Now, when did towers fall, plural? Well, I think that could well be referring to the Twin Towers. But in this time, we read that God is going to heal the breach of his people. We read on. Moreover, the light of the moon shall be as the light of the sun, and the light of the sun shall be sevenfold as the light of 7 days. That's going to happen in the tribulation period. We read over in the book of Revelation. In that day, the Lord bindeth up the breach of his people and healeth the stroke of their wound. Behold, the name of the Lord cometh from afar, burning with his anger, and the burden thereof is heavy. His lips are full of indignation, and his tongue as a devouring fire. That's the way Jesus is going to come back at the Battle of Armageddon. So there is a breach between God and Israel, and it's not going to be healed until the coming of the Lord. But it will be healed at the end of the 70th week, and that 70th week is going to come after the towers fall and certain things happen, as we read here. And one of these days, you know, this church age is going to end. The church is going to be taken out of the world and raptured, and that is when that the last week, the 70th week, the last 70 years of this prophecy will start. Dr. Spargimino, let's continue on and look at this.
Well, it says, and he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week, speaking about 7 years. And in the midst of the week, that is in the middle of that 7 year period, he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease, and for the overspreading of abominations he shall make it desolate, even until the consummation, and that determined shall be poured upon the desolate.
Now, who is going to confirm the covenant with Israel? It's going to be a false covenant, of course. But who is going to come forth and confirm and make promises to Israel?
The Antichrist, who is referred to a little bit earlier, that passage, he's from the people of the prince that shall come, speaking about the Romans who came. And, of course, that's one of the great arguments for a European Antichrist, a revived Roman Empire, as we've been speaking about in chapter 7.
We read, he shall confirm the covenant for 1 week, but in the midst of the week he shall cause the sacrifice and oblation to cease. Now that is the abomination spoken of by Jesus Christ. we know that is true because Jesus referred to that when he referred to the prophecy of Daniel. He said, as Daniel prophesied, the Antichrist will commit the abomination of desolation and stand on the Temple Mount, showing himself that he is God, and commanding everyone in the world to take his mark and image, or worship his image, or be killed. So that is to become in the midst of the 70th week, or in the midst of the 7 years, after 3.5 years, as we read in the book of Revelation. And I think it's just amazing how all these prophecies in the Bible fit together, and how near we are to that time, Brother Larry.
It's absolutely amazing, and we know that, as we pointed out previously, that a lot of what Daniel prophesied happened in his lifetime. So he was right on, and so we can know that because those prophecies that have been fulfilled literally took place, then we can also have that assurance that unfulfilled prophecy in the future will also literally take place.
Now, I know we've kind of rushed through this prophecy to get it in one broadcast, but we wanted to present it all in one program because we want to go ahead and finish the book. But if you would like the complete commentary on this chapter and all the book of Daniel, it's in my commentary. It's over 300 pages. It's called Daniel the Prophet. Brother Jerry will come now and tell you how to get a copy of my book on Daniel if you don't already have one.
Thanks, Brother Hutchings. The updated commentary is available by phone, mail, or through the Internet. Number to call is 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio Ministries, Post Office Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008. The website is at swrc.com. The 308-page Daniel the Prophet book is offered in appreciation of your $15 contribution in the United States, $17 for our friends in Canada. The book of Daniel in the Bible has not changed, but many of the prophecies have come more into focus in these last days. Modern technology makes it much easier to see how the things Daniel prophesied can actually come to pass. Be sure to get your copy of this compelling commentary. When Brother Hutchings and Brother Larry finish the series of programs, there will be 8 of them, and they're available on CD or cassette tape for an offering of $25 in the U.S., $27 in Canada. Again, the number to call is 1-800-652-1144. If you'd rather write, the mailing address is P.O. Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008. And the web address is swrc.com. Call centers open from 7:30 in the morning until 6 in the evening Central Daylight Time. Next week it'll be Central Time as we say goodbye to Daylight Time on Sunday, November 6. You'll probably want to set your clocks back Saturday evening when you go to bed, so you'll be on time for church Sunday morning. Be sure to contact us right away for your copy of Daniel the Prophet. When you read it, we believe you'll have a better understanding of what's going on in the world today. Stay tuned now for today's Bible in the News report over most of these stations. Join Brother Hutchings and Brother Larry tomorrow at this time for your Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. Welcome to today's Bible in the News report, a feature of your Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. I'm Jerry Giltner. I'll be bringing you today's report. Schools of journalism have been turning out students who take a new slant on what the role of the media is in America for quite some time. Time was reporters did just that, report, leaving the listener or reader to make his or her own decisions about any underlying meanings that might exist. That's no longer true. Modern journalists believe it is their duty to interpret the news. Now, online journalism courses are doing the same. We learned that from an exclusive story from Fox News website on September 29, 2011. We quote, "A new online journalism course on Islam appears to downplay the threat posed by global jihad groups, suggesting reporters keep the death toll from Islamic terrorism in context by comparing that toll to the number of people killed every year by malaria, HIV/AIDS, and other factors. Jihad is not a leading cause of death in the world," the online course cautions studying journalists. While that is technically true, researchers at the Culture and Media Institute, who examined the online program, took exception to that and numerous other claims made in the Poynter News University course. Don Gaynor, vice president of the Institute, said the course is sweeping these threats under the rug while watering down the section on jihad with inappropriate comparisons. Infectious disease, we have government structures to prevent that. That's great. In radical Islam, we have not even one organization, but several organizations that are constantly seeking to kill Americans and others too, he said. Seems like journalists should not be involved in trying to downplay that. The Islam reporting program is supported in part by a group, the Social Science Research Council, which has received funding from organizations backed by billionaire George Soros. In the section on jihad, the course informs readers that the word merely means struggle in Arabic. This is something White House counterterrorism advisor John Brennan has sought to remind the public in the past. The course notes that terrorism in the name of jihad has failed to mobilize Muslims outside of a few territories. Close quotes. Struggle is one of several meanings of the word jihad. But when we look at how many Muslims use the word, we find that countless thousands of people have died under the banner of jihad. Journalists and the White House may want to downplay jihad, but the facts prove that it should be taken very seriously. Could we call the downplaying of jihad deceitful? We think so. And God's Word has something to say about that. Put away from thee a froward mouth, and perverse lips put far from thee. That's from Proverbs chapter 4, verse 24. That word froward means deceitful. That's today's Bible in the News report, a presentation of Southwest Radio Ministries. These reports are published each month in a booklet. You can get a complimentary copy by calling, writing, or visiting our website. The number to call is 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio Ministries, Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008. The web address, swrc.com. Join us for the next Your Watchman on the Wall program, when once again we include a Bible in the News report.